Hello and welcome back to Masters of Our Domain, the podcast which was once about the hit 90s sitcom Seinfeld and is now about the classical world, shows about the classical world, things of that nature. I am joined, as ever, by my intrepid co-hosts, Patrick Ryman and Phoebe Roy.
Hello.
Hi. Sorry I missed last week. I forgot that Thanksgiving is an American thing and is not widely shared. I was literally walking on the beach with my children and I'm like, oh shit.
Patrick was kidnapped and forced to gladiate.
Far worse. I was forced to spend an entire week with my mother. That's so much worse than gladiating. I would much rather engage in blood sport in an arena. No, I kid. I love my mother. She's not an easy person.
Fair enough.
We fair need
to fit her into the conniving MILF matrix that we've built.
That matrix didn't come out of nowhere, folks.
It's the classic archetypes that we all know a conniving MILF.
So last week, Pat had been temporarily kidnapped by a Tides of History super fan, who said, no, embody the historical process in the spirit of one man, or I'll break your legs. So that's why he wasn't there last week.
Yeah, it was, funnily enough, on that beach, I have been recognized by voice while shouting at my children to not die in the water. This guy came up to me, he's like, do you host Tides of History? I'm like, yes, I do. I didn't know that I would be recognizable from that.
It's delightful.
It was delightful.
It's so funny to be recognizable only from voice. That's like a really just, the people are not clocking you at all, and then you say something about like the Mesopotamians, but then they're like, it's him.
And you're like, Bagpuss.
That's right. Yeah, it's like, do you reckon people ever recognize that like British Pathé newsreel guy by voice? I mean, he's probably dead now, but just like they hear him go, ah, women, and they're like, oh my god, it's the guy. Now they're allowed to work. Watch out, fellas. Good old one for the real old newsreel heads there.
I have watched an embarrassing number of those.
Yeah, they are pretty fun. Shoes.
What's this new trend of people going to the gym? That's my favorite one. I've watched that one like seven times where it's like, what are these people doing in here with all of these machines?
Yeah, and a lot of the time you can't answer. Like they're just like they're being jiggled by the machines, jiggled and wiggled.
That's something that, frankly, modern fitness misses, is the jiggling and wiggling machines. Like, I think we should bring those back.
No, you can have those vibrating plate things that I don't think they do anything.
That's true.
Yeah, they just juggle the fuck out of you.
Yeah,
but that's, look, you want to feel like you're doing something but not actually do something. I feel like that's a great niche to be in the fitness market.
Yeah.
That is very true. Speaking about things that will shake you to the very core of your being, how do we feel about
being jiggled and wiggled?
Yeah, how do we feel about episode 10 of Those About to Die?
I was taken aback. I'm not going to lie to you.
Even by the standards to which we've grown accustomed over the prior 9 episodes, this was real bad.
This was real bad. In fact, like when I was I would say that I did this while I was watching it. I actually did this at I did this at 13 minutes past 1 in the morning. Just having a little bit of
as you do.
Having a little bit of fun in the office. And came up with a list of alternative shows with the same title. So we've got Hose about to Die, which is a show about tights makers from Yorkshire. We've got Those About to Die. About is the archaic version of around, as in turnabout. Those About to Die, a show about rival stonemasons arguing over a boundary. About as in approximately, a boo as in French for at the end, two as in also, two the number, a sequel where Domitian is even gayer.
Those About to Die, where they're all working in a clothes shop.
Yep. Well, I actually had
about the triangle shirtwaist fire.
That was a show about rival textile mills, but yeah, those both work.
Yeah, yeah, that's nice.
Those about to die. There's a show about owls. Those about to die, definite article in a number of Northern European languages. And those about to die, DAI, recognition of the large numbers of Welsh actors in the show.
That's fucking good. That was delightful.
Thank you.
I'm sorry that you were doing that at 13 minutes past one in the morning, but glad that we've been exposed to that. So a little bit of mixed feelings on that for you, Phoebe. I texted to our group chat as we were all watching this, that if this show gets another season, I will shit myself.
On the pod, Wyman will shit himself.
I can't believe that they did all of this. You don't have to work that hard to get me to say that, like, the Roman Empire did a lot of really bad stuff.
Sure.
And that our baseline view of the Roman Empire should be predicated on an understanding of it as a people grinding machine.
Sure.
Yeah.
That this is, at a basic level, what the Roman Empire is that it is grinding up people into gristle and using them to build empire and build the city and to run the economy, that it's all based on exploitation, violent or not.
Not a bad description of any empire.
Yeah, it's all empires are like that. Rome just makes it really manifest with things like the Colosseum.
Apart from the Bunny Empire, that's like a bit more of a mixed bag.
Empire magazine. But of course, this leaves out the other cornerstone of the Roman Empire. I've only seen this TV show, by the way, which is, of course, chariot racing.
Chariot racing, yeah. Yeah, but like what I found fucking appalling about this episode is that you don't have to make up bad shit about the Roman Empire to show us how bad it is.
No.
Like you don't have to do things like making Domitian threaten the lives of loved ones of gladiators to make them fight. Like, that's not, you don't need to do that to show us the horror of what's happening here. Like, it's so fucking stupid.
Well, we get more than that. It's more than just a threat.
And literally slicing the throat of a child in the Colosseum, like, even by Roman standards, like, that they would have been appalled by that. Because that's not what the Colosseum was for. That's not how they understood blood sport as entertainment. It's not how they understood reinforcing the social hierarchy through performative violence. It is ahistorical and nasty in ways that serve no broader purpose, either for understanding Rome or, frankly, for advancing the plot.
It more felt like a way of realizing that they'd written themselves into a corner with, like, what was going to happen. Like, we'll get into, like, which child we're talking about, but, like, what was going to happen to this child, and then being like, can we just kill him? Is that an option?
It's a decent option.
Is that a decent option?
It just
option?
Goes to can show that just... Roman Super Nanny would have been a much harsher show.
Yeah. you don't want to get put on the Roman naughty step.
Yeah.
Nope.
Don't know. Well, honestly, right, you slit his throat once, he's not going to do it again. That's what you got to think, you know. It's an example to the other children as well.
I hope that would not be my nanny.
Yeah, that would be. I've gotten in a very stern nanny from a previous generation. She's actually a reanimated Roman governess.
Yeah, she's a big matron energy.
This is the thing, like, because she seemed a little bit better, because our last nanny was a Spartan, so we were like, well, she can't possibly be worse.
You can't keep leaving the children to die of exposure just because you think they're weak. I've told you this.
Yeah, that's just a baby.
Stop giving wine to the toddler. Yeah. You can't metabolize it.
Calling your husband and being like, sorry, I'm not really happy with the babysitter saying that our child has helot vibes.
Look, you know what? If you don't sack the nanny, you're going to come back on your shield. How about that?
Yeah, she keeps calling him a Messenian and in a derogatory way, and I don't know what that means, but it doesn't sound good.
Yeah,
it doesn't sound good.
I've never heard the word Athenian sound so hateful.
Yeah.
It's coming from the Spartan nanny.
Yeah, it's difficult being a Spartan nanny once the children realize that if they can trap you in a narrow space like a corridor or a doorway, your size and strength are less valuable. and they can start picking you off using a tight phalanx formation.
Yeah, I'm just imagining the Spartan nanny who's like, infant can't even hold a spear. Can't even hold a spear.
That's what the Spartan nanny would do to the Persian nanny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah, yeah. They don't get on well at nanny club.
But then again. She's getting the girls out as well. It's not just the boys. She's getting them out doing some exercise, learning some healthy competitiveness. It's not like that Corinthian nanny we had.
No. She kept them secluded. And what use is that?
Yeah. You don't want a secluded child.
Yeah, awfully sexist. I mean, we expose all male and female equally here.
Would you seclude a child?
All I'm thinking now is that Omid Jalili should have been in 300.
Playing who? Playing Leonidas.
Oh, Leonidas would also have been quite fun. He's playing both like Eddie Murphy.
Again, I can't overstate how much more compelling this bit is than the episode that we watched. Like, it's been a long time since I watched an episode of TV that I was so appalled by. Like, at every level, like, as a thing about Rome and also just as a piece of writing and work, it's utterly devoid of any sort of coherent thematic value. Mm-hmm. It has absolutely no idea what it's trying to say about its characters, or about the world that they inhabit, or about any broader kind of point. Nope. It is absolutely extraneous. Like, do you remember, like, in the later seasons of Game of Thrones, when there was just lots of nasty stuff that happened to characters all the time, and they were like, is this necessary? Do we need to be doing this? This show heard that conversation and said,
yes.
you can do whatever you want to any character at any time for any reason, no matter how fucking stupid, and we'll film it. That's what this show said.
You know what it's like? You know how, like, if you use any phrasing in a film review, they are allowed to quote it like truncated in order to change the meaning on the marketing material. So if you say the film is not the best that you've ever seen, then they are allowed to cut out the not and put the best I've ever seen on the poster. Mm.
Yeah,
like that, but it's they stopped listening after half the sentence. So they listened to what the Game of Thrones writers were talking about in the special, TV, like non present day TV high school canteen that they've got. Mm-hmm. So you've got like the writers on like that. Terrible show about the Vikings. You've got the Shogun writers. They're like, they're really hot and cool and no one's allowed to sit with them. You've got these guys. They've all got something kind of, you know, fairly severely the matter with them. You've got the Game of Thrones writers.
They've sort of been like remedial TV writing class. They've like been held back a year.
Yeah, you've got the kind of, they're in stream four. They did an exam at the end of the year and, you know, it was a disaster.
Yeah, they're doing the foundation paper.
You got the Game of Thrones writers who like had like a lot of promise, but then put like, but then their parents put so much pressure on them that they just overshot it like a darts player who like fucks it at the last hurdle.
Big former gifted kid.
Yeah,
energy.
Former gifted kid energy from the Game of Thrones writers. So they get to the GCSEs and they've had so much pressure put on them that they just sort of massively overshoot and fall short of the mark. But they still very much look down upon those about to die writers. Just keep this in your head. Keep this in your head. This taxonomy.
You know the Shogun writers are having the most fun. They're just coming up with shit that like a 17th century English guy would say.
Yeah, and then like every
cockroach. Can we make him say that?
And then every so often you have like the writers of like something like Treme or like Boardwalk Empire, and they're just like, we're prestige TV too. It's like, yeah, but literally nobody watched it, so.
Yeah, that is.
I did rewatch the first season of Boardwalk Empire recently, and I was like, it's amazing how fucking good this is in comparison to those about.
Oh yeah, no, it's pretty good. It's just like one of those ones that just like never broke through. I feel like
that show's been watched 3 times, and one of them was Phoebe, and 2 of them were Patrick. That's incredible. That's
essentially correct.
Yeah, right. The viewer stats. This is a crazy episode because it's basically part 2 of episode 9. There isn't really a meaningful divide between the two episodes. They don't have a distinct plot from one another. It's just a continuation.
Okay, so at the end of the last episode, I wrote a note that I meant to bring up last episode, and then I forgot, which is that, you know, I'm about to give Milo a little memory test, little reading comprehension test. Do you remember who Rufus is?
Oh fuck! We had a whole conversation about this last episode. He
the fuck is Rufus?
Yeah. Fucking good question.
Good point, Pat.
He was the guy who was gonna tell Titus about the plot to kill him. Is that right?
Yeah, sort of. He's in league with Berenike. When he
he's the husband. He's the husband of the woman of Selena with the shares.
But he stole her shares. Right. It was him that did it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
When he gets brought in for his audience with Berenike, he says, "I wasn't aware I was being brought to meet the Queen of the Jews," and he pronounces it "juice." He pronounces it the Queen of the Juice, and I have just
Because she's remarried OJ Simpson.
She's the Queen of the Juice, and I've just written here me when I've got a hangover. So I just thought I'd thought that's something which.
Or when you're on steroids.
Yeah. When I'm temporarily battery powered, etc. So Berenike, who is a main character, she's an important character.
Yeah. Gets stabbed. Not seen much of her in a while.
Gets stabbed to death at the end of the last episode. Does this get mentioned even once?
Nope.
It gets mentioned precisely once in the most insane way, which is that at the end of the episode, Domitian and Titus are leaving, and Titus just looks at the dead body of his girlfriend, and he just goes to Domitian, "Did you do that?" And he goes, "No." And he's like, "Weird." And then they just like walk off.
Okay, fine. It gets mentioned once.
Okay, so one of the several things in this episode that just came up out of nowhere. For example, the relationship between the one surviving Spanish brother and the youngest Numidian sister, a relationship that they have not talked about in like 3 episodes, has played absolutely zero role, is now central to the plot of episode 10. Like, not like literally didn't come up. I don't think the character of the Numidian girl even appeared in some of the last couple of episodes in any sense.
Which one?
And the youngest Numidian
Jula.
Sister.
Oh yeah, no. We've had the whole specious romance with her and the Spanish lad who hangs around saying peculiar things to horses.
Yeah, but it didn't come up for like 3 episodes. And now all of a sudden it's absolutely central to the plot. Like, what the also, I had a note about this. The one scene where the one little street girl is it literally repeats the entire plot of the episode to that point as exposition. When she's fetching, is it when she's fetching the Spanish lad?
That's pretty good. What's that, lassie?
Jula stuck down a well.
In this case, it's like Scottish version. What's that, lassie?
Jesus God, yeah. I have never watched an episode of television I enjoyed less than this.
What's amazing, and you've watched every other episode of this show, so that is actually saying something. The relationship between the Spanish guy and Jula, they sort of make it essential to the plot, but it really doesn't have to be. It's not really load bearing in any way.
No.
There's a lot in this show of what I would call like plot Jenga, where there's actually quite a lot of blocks you can pull out and the plot still kind of makes sense such as it is, to the extent that it makes sense already. But then they just add in extra like over determining things that make no sense. So like like the Spanish guy's like, oh no, they're gonna execute my girlfriend in the arena. So he like runs to the arena, and then he gets there and realizes that, well, yeah, obviously you can't do anything, because, you know, it's like you can't just turn up and be like, oh, I don't do that, and they'll be like, no, you're right, actually.
So actually, you might just have
Kwame
to watch
rescues
this.
Her, yeah, which he was gonna do anyway.
Which he was gonna do anyway. So what happens is we have Kwame and Viggo having a kind of, you know, conversation. And Kwame is all like, oh yeah, we don't know what's going to be out there. We don't know what we're going to fight. You know, it could be anything. Today we fight. It could be, actually, I don't know. I'm a Northman. I don't really have much.
Sort of these things called stag
boots. Yeah. And okay, so the navigator has shown up, who's going to tell Titus that Domitian's planning to kill him. Titus looks very funny with his daft little red emperor boots. We have some really annoying stuff where they try and do a little bit of the Romans. They're just like you. Where they have like these two kind of non-specific garden variety morons who are in every gladiatorial crowd, and they're like Kwame fans. They're like Kwame ultras. So whenever they show them, they're like going, oh, come on, Kwame. But it looks just really feels like people saying like, come on, Tim, to Tim Henman. Like it feels very much like
Henman Hill for the Coliseum.
It feels very much like Kwame is about to come second to last in a kind of junior school sack race. That's kind of what it feels like to me, and not.
Kwame is lumbering around the arena like Tim Henman in set five of a match he was two sets up in and will eventually lose.
Yeah,
like, he does seem like he doesn't have the juice. You know,
he doesn't have the juice. He is not the queen of the juice.
Yeah, he's about to lose in a Coliseum semi-final to Ivo Karlovic for some reason.
yeah, exactly. That you know what? I'm actually really, really happy that your peculiar method of marshalling and storing knowledge really came through on the Tim Henman facts there.
But if Kwame is the Tim Henman of the Coliseum, who is the Greg Rosetsky? That's the big question.
Such a good Flammer.
the part I love about those two guys is that clearly at some point somebody used the phrase man in the crowd. Like when they were brainstorming ideas for how to structure this show and characters to have, and then they literally just did man in the crowd.
Yeah.
It's so on the nose that it defies parody.
Yeah, because for a minute I thought, oh, are we going to do a thing where we have like this kind of brief window into the lives of these just kind of ordinary any guy Romans, so that like to kind of pull the lens out and to remind you that there's these gladiatorial combats, and there's the chariot racing, and there's the sort of, you know, the kind of fight to the death between the two imperial brothers, but most Romans are just like doing what they do, doing their jobs, chilling, just, you know, in a kind of the Romans are just like you. I really thought they were going to do that, but then they did not. What they did instead is they have a bit where they say gladiators engage, and it's like on the TV show Gladiators when they say you'll go on my first whistle and you'll go on my second whistle. And I think they should have done that. I think someone should have got a whistle is what I'm saying. It should have been a whistle.
Yeah. Big whistle oversight.
Big
here.
Whistle oversight.
You can just hear him in the background going, Kwame, nobody likes us.
Yeah. it's because they like that, you know, like the Coliseum is famously sponsored by Big Vuvuzela. So there are no whistles available. So Kwame and Viggo are having to fight each other to save their family members. Kwame to save Jula, and Viggo to save his angelic little boy. His wife is watching in the audience like she's there for just like a nice day out with the girls. It's like, why are you kind of like smiling and laughing, and then you're like, oh wait, no, that's my son who has been like, and And again, so
when
like,
you're out of the comedy store and your husband gets up and has a go when the MC asks if anyone wants to, and she's like, oh no, I told Gary not to do that. They're professionals, Gary. They're going to humiliate you.
Don't try and be funny when a comedian asks you something. Answer seriously.
Well, you know, we went to the Coliseum last week. Yeah, Gary had his head clattered off. Yeah. Yeah, by a ghoul. Yeah, well, he would get up there. I told him not to get up there.
Yeah. He will heckle. He's got to have the last word, my Gary.
Heckler at the Coliseum. I'd like to see you give it a go.
Go on, Kwame, tell us a joke.
Yeah.
Rubbish. That's not funny. That's not funny. Come here. You know what? I'm gonna come to your job and I'm gonna kill everyone there if you think you're so good at being a gladiator. Mm. Yeah.
You guys are fucking joking about this, and it's again, it's so much better than what is actually in the show.
It's actually in the show.
I keep using words like appalling, terrible, horrifying, really fucking bad. Yep. Like I can't. I am running out of adjectives to use to describe how bad this is.
We also have just in case. We have all been collectively concussed in some kind of terrible kind of sort of minor stonemasonry incident. We have somebody helpfully explaining what's going on, which is somebody says they're using their families to make him fight his best friend. Yeah, we fucking know that. We know that Vigo and Kwame are friends because literally whenever Vigo shows up, some fucker says, that's Kwame's friend. That's the only reason I know who he is.
Well, this is back to Pat's theory that this is a show designed for people who are on their phone for most of it.
You have to have
constant reminders of who people are. Amazing that they thought we were going to remember who the fuck Rufus was.
I think it is a clinical trial for a new dementia drug. Mm-hmm. That's what I think.
That is the most parsimonious explanation for why this show is the way it is. That you have Occam's razor this show.
I think that's what it is. Okay, so Kwame overpowers Vigo and he gets the crowd like going. And he kind of does a sort of like we will rock you kind of boom, boom, tsh, boom, boom, tsh. And it's like, free him, let him go. And Titus, who has, by the way, up until this point, shown no sign whatsoever of being this kind of man, he gives the thumbs down. And so Kwame has to kill Vigo, which is completely out of character with how they have established Titus. It's not out of character with the sort of man that Titus actually was, but it's completely out of sync with how they've established him as a character. And then he gives him the wooden sword. So he's freed. He doesn't have to be a gladiator if he doesn't want to. So he's freed.
I like that the wooden sword was in like a little kind of epic holster directly in front of like the Imperial box, and he kind of like pulls it out and it does this satisfying like clunk noise.
Also doesn't
like it's like General Grievous emerging from the ship or whatever.
It doesn't like
good ass sound design right there.
It doesn't a wooden sword. I know what it signified, but like doesn't it sound like it's like the booby prize?
The wooden spoon.
Like the wooden spoon.
Like worst gladiator. Yeah. Most improved.
Most embarrassing gladiator.
the part that I loved about the wooden sword thing is when Kwame hands it off as if handing the sword off means that you can give freedom to someone else.
Yeah. Like transitive properties.
It's not transferable. Yeah. What the fuck is happening?
Take my freedom. But also Kwame is like, which is actually, honestly, it's a little bit fair enough. Kwame is a little bit like, yeah, fine. Thank you for my wooden sword, but you made me kill my best friend, you dickhead. Like what the fuck, man? That was really, you know what? You know what? I think that we need a little intervention to talk to Titus because that was really not like him. I don't know what he was up to making me kill my best mate.
Yeah, he was off the seed there.
That was really uncool. Like, I think we should make a separate group chat to talk about Titus. I think we should we should all talk to Titus and tell us that we're worried. And then Vigo's like, oh, do what you can to keep my son alive. And you're like, oh no, something terrible's going to happen to the lovely little boy. And then like, meanwhile, his wife, who's like watching these things unfold, and is like, she is no longer having a good day out with the girls. It is now a bad trip.
Every time it cuts to where Viggo's wife is, it's like any time it cuts to the fans at a West Ham game. It's just, it's like head in hands. Just like, again.
This is not blowing bubbles. I don't see any bubbles.
He dies every week. You're nothing special. He dies every week.
There's a picture I'm very fond of a bald, fat, older gentleman who's shirtless and has a bunch of really awful faded tattoos sitting at a Man U game like this in the stands with his arms crossed, just looking mad as hell. And like, I want a story about that guy at the Coliseum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the guy. Like, that's the guy I want to know about.
Like a guy who's got all of his money on a really bad bet.
Yeah.
Like I don't understand after watching 10 episodes of this show is how you can take this subject matter and make it this uninteresting.
It's sort of unclear.
Yeah, I don't understand how you can make gladiators, chariot racing, gambling, political intrigue, MILFs, one of my favorite topics. I don't understand how you can make those things as boring and uncompelling as they've done here.
You're trialing the dementia drug.
The only way that this show makes any sense is if you have advanced chronic traumatic encephalopathy.
Yeah.
If you spent your whole life like pounding your head against brick walls,
everyone who's been watching this show has been without their knowledge has been cast into like an early Christopher Nolan film, so you just keep having to kind of you come to the forecourt of a garage, and then you've got Rufus is Selena's husband and stole her blue shares written on the back of your hand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the only way to make this make sense.
It's the only way. And you know what?
Yeah.
You know what? I would like to see an episode of this show directed by Christopher Nolan. So the wife who is played by like every wife of a doomed best friend in this kind of thing is played by not literally the same actress, but like functionally the same actress. And they're all Meg Ryan in Top Gun. So there was a kind of cut scene where she's singing "You've Lost That Loving Feeling" with Viggo, and Domitian's acting guilty.
Talk to me, Viggo.
Yeah, Domitian's acting guilty as anything. He's kind of tugging on his toga and swallowing, and
he's like, "Oh, I'm so
I'm just feeling a little bit warm, brother." a little bit toasty. And then Titus thinking, what's toast? I don't know what that is. So Titus does a kind of almost like kind of sort of Brothers Grimm style kind of, if somebody were to betray somebody who they owe loyalty to, would you choose punishment or would you choose mercy? And Domitian's like, this is a good trick question. I would choose mercy, actually. And this is when he decides to kill Viggo. And then just as Domitian's about to leave, he yells, kill the boy. And so they kill the boy, which, as Pat said, is not only not very reflective of what would have happened in the arena, but it's also just like, it's so unnecessarily grim.
Yeah, it really feels like it's like every episode of this has felt like a different show.
Yeah.
And yet again, episode 10, it's like a whole new show. They're now doing like brutally violent, like dark.
And it feels like it got kind of like taken over by some kind of crowdsourced AI on 4chan. Like, oh yeah, let's do a dark ep. It's like whoever it was that did the dark SpongeBob.
Yeah. Well, that's. The bewildering turns in this show never cease to amaze me. Like, because again, like to your point about how it feels like a different show, all of a sudden at the end of episode 9, when they just do body horror and cut out the guy's tongue, where you're like, what about the sequence of events that we've done leads us to just a shocking instance of body horror that comes out of nowhere? Like, I can't overstate how baffling the whole thing is. And also, you see, so you were talking about the crowd shots a minute ago when they're like the cutting to the woman's face as her son is there. Like, it's so poorly made at the level of craft. Mm. Like, it's you, if you watch this and then you watch something that doesn't suck, you can immediately see the difference. Yeah. At every level, every single shot in this show is somehow from the wrong angle, the wrong length.
Yeah.
It's like I don't understand how they couldn't get it right by accident.
So we've been rewatching the BBC adaptation of Wolf Hall ahead of watching The Mirror and the Light that's just come out, and mm-hmm. I watched an episode of Wolf Hall on the same day that I watched episode 10. And that was a really focusing experience. I'll tell you that for nothing. Okay, so
I'll do it.
So we've got a kind of weird sort of Cirque du Soleil thing happening. Then the guys in the crowd are just like, "I'm so glad I did my shoes before we came here. I'm so glad."
Yeah, mate, I'm fucking pinging.
Then we have Mr. Carp. We have Mr. Carp showing up.
Mr. Carp.
Who's the gladiator supervisor guy with the bowl haircut? The one whose haircut indicates that your rent is about to go up. If you see a guy with this haircut around where you live, your rent is about to double.
He's got the old millennial writer haircut.
He's got the millennial writer haircut. It's regrettable. Yeah. And so he releases the lion. The Chekhov's lion.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Chekhov's lion. Yeah.
We don't know why,
and it's not explained.
It's like he thinks there's something wrong with the lion, so he opens the cage to check on the lion. The lion is playing possum and kills him and then escapes.
Why would you do that?
I don't... Phoebe, you're like, you've done three steps more thinking about this
yell through the bars. You're right, lion.
Hey, lion.
Hello.
Okay. Yeah. Were there other ways to do it? Absolutely. Did they? Would those have served the unidentifiable plot? Uh-huh. No. They wouldn't.
So we have Tenax fighting with one of the Praetorian guards, and he says, "Never pit a soldier against a street fighter." Which fine. Except Tenax is not a street fighter, is he? We haven't seen him doing any street fighting at all.
No. In fact, pretty much every time we've seen 10X fighting, he's been getting his ass kicked.
He gets his clock clean for him. Literally every time he fights somebody else. It's amazing that he's alive. In fact,
man's
he's
got
concussed.
A very legible clock at
he's
this
got
point.
A very,
not a speck of
very
dirt
legible
on it.
Clock, yeah.
Yeah, you know what time it is when you're looking at 10X. He's like the Flavor Flav of the ancient world.
Though with somewhat less support for US women's water polo.
Yeah.
That's
Flavor Flavianus once again returns to the board.
He's the third Flavian son. Flavor Flavian.
He's the one who should have been emperor
Counterfactual, right. Where Flavor Flav is Roman emperor.
Yeah, that's Gladiator 3.
that's Gladiator 3.
Yeah. Flavor Flav is played by Omid Djalili.
So being charitable, right? Okay, I'm gonna be charitable for a moment.
All right.
The what they're trying to do with the lion scene in Kwame is that, you know, this is what Rome does to all of the wonderful thing, to all of the wonder in the world, is it brings them to Rome and it cages them
and then lets them out.
Yeah, charitably, the point they're trying to make. Now, do they succeed in doing that? Let's judge them by the standard that they've set. Is that a meaningful point to make? B, do they succeed in communicating that? Take them at their attempt here.
So I will answer the first question. First question, to my mind, is, everyone knows that.
Yeah.
The second is, no, they don't communicate it. That's my thinking.
It is an asinine point made as bluntly as possible and still somehow failing to
and
hit the mark.
And still somehow confusing. Also, we have like Antonia and Calla who've like briefly chummed up in a kind of sort of MILF's mother's meeting set up. And Antonia's like, oh, must get me away from this house of death. Presumably forgetting that she and her husband were planning a coup. So I don't know what her issue is.
I can't believe they had my husband eaten by crocodiles just because we were trying to overthrow the government.
Simply for trying to overthrow the government because of woke.
Thematically, this show is the rough equivalent of aiming a sawn-off shotgun at a target a foot away and somehow completely missing it.
And the shotgun has been given to a toddler for some reason.
And the toddler shoots itself instead of hitting the target is the only way I can explain how this show functions or fails to.
Okay, so Cal is not also not happy that Aura is now a gladiator, but we kind of.
When the fuck did that last happen? Episode, by the way,
The lion's now knocking around, and like Kwame presumably is going to fight it. And something that I said in the chat when we were talking about this, it's so funny that when they were writing this, because they presumably have also been concussed, just like we have. It's so funny to be somebody who's writing on this show. So presumably you have some sense of what the stakes are for the show, and being like, okay, so what are the stakes? What is the big deciding climactic fight? Is it between Tenax and his kind of reflection of his former potentially enslaved self, Ursus? No, it's not, because we for some reason dealt with that several episodes ago. Is it Kwame versus Vigo, two ultimately decent men forced to fight for the atavistic greed of a meat grinding empire? No, because that's going to be taken care of in the first 2 minutes of the episode. Is it Kwame and Flammer as a kind of sort of buildings Roman, him learning to be a fire? No, not really. Is it the two brothers? Is it Domitian versus Titus? You know, two different modes of approaching Romanness. You've got the martial virtue guy, and then you've got the political rhetoric guy, who's also they're both very cruel in their own ways, but in like, you know, they represent a kind of different method of how Rome's going to be. No, it's none of that. It's Kwame versus the fucking lion. That's not the climactic antagonism. First of all,
yeah, it turns out we were all wrong. The central conflict of the show is Kwame versus the lion. He hates that lion.
Kwame versus the MS Paint lion. The lion.
It's just like lots of stuff has been cut for time, and so you don't see all of the scenes of like Kwame glaring at the lion.
Fucking lion.
Fucking ate that lion.
Fucking puffy head.
The lion says something racist to him in like episode 4 that had to get cut for time.
That lion is a. You know what? Fuck that lion. He is a fucking twat.
The lion was treating Kwame like a player of African descent in La Liga. That was what was cut for time. But isn't that fucking hilarious that like in a show where they have deliberately overstuffed it with plot lines that go nowhere, this what we take to be based on its positioning in the episode, you're 100% right that is positioned as the climactic conflict here, that shows up essentially out of nowhere.
Literally out of nowhere. Particularly since like every point up until this point, when Kwame has anything to do with the lion, he says like, oh, like the lion's a demon, the lion's like representative of one of our Numidian gods, despite the fact that they have confused this with
he keeps throwing batteries at me when I'm in the arena.
They've confused it with a Numidian god, but you know, whatever, which is apparently the line that this show is taking. And he's like, oh yeah, no, the lion is a god. I must respect my opponent. You know, this lion has been caged just like me. And then this episode, he's like, you know what? Fuck that lion. Fuck that lion and his, for whatever reason, requirement to go to a hairdresser, because big cats should not have to go to a hairdresser. And so just, who does he fucking think he is? With his wafty tail and his large
and his mullet
and his
we can say it. He's got a
and
mullet.
His mullet.
The lion does have
and
a
like,
mullet.
Oh, yeah. He's all like going, oh yeah, well, you know, we're the lions. We're the king of the plain. Can we really trust the lions to have the interests of the gazelles or the flamingos or the wildebeest in to be considering those to be in any way important? Can you trust a Lion King? Yeah. You cannot trust a Lion King.
The Dutch really gave up when they were naming the wildebeest, didn't they?
Yeah, we Milo, before you say that, we made this observation last episode.
Oh, did we? I've got a wildebeest come up two episodes in a row.
We're talking about block coloured animals and about how it's embarrassing to be a block coloured animal.
Oh yeah, that is true.
I mean,
you really do keep us in check, Pat. This is something which is worth pointing out.
In fairness to the lion is the only character who has a consistent storyline and whose actions make sense.
See, this is interesting. Mm. He does not even the lion, even the CGI lion, who is. Because it's at one point you're a bit like, oh, so is the lion actually like a demon god? Like, is that actually right? Or is he just a lion and Kwame is being insane?
He is too big for a lion. They have made him just like bigger than a lion.
He is pretty large. He's a big boy.
Yeah.
He's,
they've made him like grizzly bear size.
Fucking, yeah, fucking Sainsbury's basic Aslan over there.
Yeah. But it is kind of like that. Again, if this was a better show, it could be like, that show, The Terror. I don't know if either of you two have seen that.
I love The Terror, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good show. It's about the two British ships that got like lost in the Arctic looking for the Northwest Passage in like the 1840s.
Okay, exactly the sort of thing that I will never, ever watch because it sounds scary.
It's actually very scary, but it's extraordinarily good. It's one of the best TV series I've ever seen.
And it's got Tobias Menzies in it.
Oh, we love Tobias.
And Kieran Hines. It's a real Rome reunion.
And Jared Harris also. Not in Rome, but fantastic cast.
Yeah. Could be. Plausible.
Jared Harris would make a really good Cato the Younger.
Yeah.
He really would.
But yeah, there's a bit in that where they're being hunted by essentially like a demon polar bear.
Okay.
And like the Inuit call it the Toonback, and it's supposed to be, it's kind of like some like polar bear that's like also a bit of a man, and it's like kind of, it's like four times the size of a normal polar bear, and it has kind of like almost like a man's head, but it is basic. And I feel like that's kind of what they're doing with the lion here. It's like, it is a lion, but also they've made it like just way more like hench and scary than an actual lion would be. Lions aren't that big. They're not that crazy big.
It doesn't really look like a lion anyway. So, like, honestly, it looks a little bit like, you know, when you're like a kid and you're doing a poster for whatever reason, like for school, you've been asked to do a poster and you start doing the letters like massive and you're like going to do big bubble writing with your felt tip pen. And then you're like, fuck, I have run out of room because I didn't measure the letters. And so I'm going to have to start going. And it's just completely out of scale with like the amount of paper you've got. I think that's what happened in the renderers department. So they like, they got sent away to do the lion and they came back and they went, here it is. Here's the lion. And
that's why Kwame has to be so small.
Yeah, and they were just like, it's massive. It's much larger than a lot. You've made it too big. Why have you made it so big? Because you didn't give us any scale. You didn't tell us what it was supposed to be in relation to. We have no relational objects to the lion. So this is just, you asked for a lion. Here's a lion. Yeah, but look at the size of it. It looks like a bus.
They spent the whole rendering budget on the mullet,
is the only realistic
thing
about it.
The way it rustles in the breeze, you know.
It's don't get me wrong. Do not take this as a critique of the lion.
We like
mullet.
The lion. We like
that is 100% not what I'm
the
saying.
Lion, okay, so what we're saying about Elise the lion is a consistent character. He isn't. He doesn't speak.
You're right.
He also isn't a consistent character because he starts attacking people left, right, and center, and it's an entire plot point that the lion only attacks if charged and if provoked.
Yeah.
So why is the lion suddenly...
They can't even fucking get that right.
You need to keep the standard lion behavior straight in your head. Unless you're saying, Kwame's right, he literally is a demon god, and in which case he is unpredictable, we don't know what he's going to do. But I think you kind of have to make that point a bit more strongly and a bit earlier.
Well, the lion's had four pints now. He's getting a bit rowdy.
Can I make one pedantic action scene point about given everything you've just said, this actually does follow from what you just said, because the lion is fucking enormous, right? Mm. Okay. If you are, let's say conservatively, a 600-pound lion and you jump on someone with all of your weight and force.
Yeah, you're going to kill him. You're going to kill him.
It's
very much.
You're going to pulp whatever you land on. And so how shouldn't Kwame be dead now?
Yeah, Kwame should definitely be dead. Kwame should definitely be dead.
I thought for a second that that's what they were going to do, is that Kwame dies killing the lion. I'm like, now there is a mildly interesting way of ending that. That I would be on board with that. Not what they did. Unscathed.
They have kind of Kwame and Aura kind of going kind of back to back, and that's like it's quite like kind of early aughts Lara Croft, you know.
So like, oh yeah, remember when his sister became a gladiator 2 episodes ago for no reason.
It's so that they can fight the lion together.
And it hasn't come up again.
Also, like Kwame, that like squares up the lion. I know we haven't seen like a training montage, so we don't know how much he's improved. But the whole point that has led Kwame into gladiating in the first place is that he can't fight lions. He pretends that he can fight lions in order to get included on Roman hunts. So why can he suddenly fight the lion?
Because he's just spent ages, you know, training. The mental, the grind set, you know.
How do you drill Roman fighting a lion? Particularly a lion of that size. So
grab its hair, twist and pull.
So Kwame stabs the lion. Lion lands on top of him. And in my note, it's just said, is Kwame dead? No.
The weirdest bit is they pull the lion off him and he goes, Christ, that was like having sex with Nicholas Soames. And he's like, that'll be very funny in about 2,000 years.
And then Kwame says to Aura, we are one, you and I, children of Apadimac, who's their god, except not their god, because he was not the god of the Numidians. Let us curse these Romans. So I think he says that to the lion, actually. He might have said this to the lion and not to his sister. But like, the lion has no beef with Romans. The lion doesn't know what a Roman is. He's just a lion.
Yeah. He doesn't recognize the concept of the nation state.
Also, yeah. Kwame doesn't have any beef with Romans either. Like, there's an existing issue that he has with Domitian, which is never properly explained. And that I think would have been more effective if he hadn't any particular issue with Domitian, which then originates from Domitian ordering his recently dead friend's son to be murdered. Because otherwise it's just a bit like, oh yeah, yeah, that guy. Yeah, no, I already hate him. I've already sworn vengeance against him. I can't swear double vengeance.
Why? This whole fucking thing. Why? I am extraordinarily frustrated with this. It offends my deeply rooted sense of perfectionism. Yeah. And I understand that when you're making things for consumption, you got to fire and forget. You got 10 episodes to write. You got to get through 10 episodes. I get all this. I don't understand how the baseline level of competence involved in every aspect of making this was not higher. Mm.
We also have astonishingly a fair number of plot points to get through, and I know that Milo's got a little bit of schedule.
So we've got to cover the coup.
Okay, so we've got to cover the coup. We've got Titus versus Domitian. the Praetorian Guard have all been killed, but then I've put, actually, have they? Who are these lads who've shown up? Are we meant to understand this as a late day observation about Roman martial virtues? Because I honestly don't know. Then we have Titus saying to Domitian, you are no soldier. And then Titus tries to pay off the soldier and says, whatever he's paying you, I'll pay you double. And then Domitian's all like, kneel. And Titus spits on his sword. And I'm like, is this supposed to be very gay? Because this is reading to me as extremely gay.
Lubing up the sword.
He spits on it. It's hot.
And Domitian probably thought so based on his characterization so far.
Yeah. So Tenax then shows up, kills Titus with his own outfit. Like his own costume, which is a very...
He waterboards him to death using a wet hanky.
With his cloth.
The writers of this show looked at Rome and they went, you think Pullo and Varinus are Forrest Gump? I'll show you fucking Forrest Gump. Yeah. How about Tenax?
Yeah, so that's not a very dignified way to go. At this point, presumably in protest at what had just happened, my TV turned itself off and was briefly replaced by an episode of a 70s detective show called Heart to Heart. And I strongly... strongly recommend that you pause the show and go and look up Heart to Heart, Heart as in H-A-R-T, and just have a look at some of the image marketing material for the 70s detective show Heart to Heart.
Yeah, great.
Then we have Domitian doing his best kind of I'm Billy Flynn tap dancing in the Senate. All he cares about is love. He's threatening the senators with the crocodile. The senators stand for him. Then there's one kind of holdout. And then, you know, because the senators are cowards. Again, I'm not sure what point they're trying to make here. Is it that the senators are cowards? Is it that Domitian's a piece of shit? Like, unclear. We know that Domitian's a piece of shit. So this is presumably meant to be very unsettling and very kind of tomorrow belongs to me-ish and kind of new era of fascism dawning. I think they really think they were making a really good allegory. We are doing some allegory, but unfortunately, the allegory that they're doing is borrowed through the historicizing lens of Nazi Germany and of Mussolinian fascism. So it doesn't really work because it's the wrong way around. And also, this is meant to be like kind of chilling and kind of this is the new awful era of fascism. But there's no particular reason to think that Domitian will be any worse than Titus. He is supposed to be a gifted politician. He's supposed to be a gifted rhetorician. He is supposed to be a gifted tactician. And the only thing he can't do is soldier. And at this point in Roman history, after years of extremely bloody and horrible civil wars, I'm not wholly convinced that either the Senate or the populace are currently too very, very fussed about martial virtues and soldier emperors. Like that would be my guess. Yeah. But
I'm not sure if we can do a second season of this. I'm not sure if we can find that out. What's going to happen next?
Why is it supposed to be so particularly unsettling and chilling that Domitian is now emperor? Titus was only emperor because his dad was. His dad was only emperor because he took the chair in a military coup. And also, Titus was a dick. We just had Titus like 15 minutes ago having a completely innocent man killed for no reason other than the fact that he's pissed off with his brother.
Yeah.
It's devoid. This is the problem when you make something where you confuse the spectacle of violence and people being bad to each other with a moral point.
Yeah.
Those scenes of people doing bad things to one another.
Yeah.
Need to be in the service of making some larger point about human nature, about the past, about our relationship to power. Something like there needs to be some sort of coherent underlying theme to make those scenes meaningful. This show has no opinion on those.
Although,
things.
Having said that, I will advance a brief defense before we're almost done, Marlo. I will advance a brief defense of that way of doing things because I am a absolutely tireless apologist for and defender of the Zack Snyder DC films. I like them.
Sure.
I think they're great. I enjoy them. And what I like about them is I don't want to see if I'm watching a superhero film, superhero films, literally the dumbest way of wasting your one precious life is watching a superhero film. It's like willingly going down to one of those like sewage filled beaches and just being like, oh, look at me. I'm a happy hippo dancing in the mud. Like that's what a superhero film is, right?
Yeah.
So I don't want to see some kind of like, oh, like the bad guy, he's conflicted. He has some good points. He has some good points, but he goes about them in the wrong way. And the superhero is the moderating influence of the CIA, etc. But in the Zack Snyder DC films, the bad guy is like literally just like, it's just like this piece of shit. Just this big, ugly fuckhead. He's just like, I want to kill everyone for no particular reason because I am a one-dimensional fuckhead. And that's what I want.
Yeah, like the lion.
Like the lion. So I think, in a way, the making Domitian a one-dimensional fuckhead is sort of fine, but also it's incredibly stupid. So then we have, sorry, Pat, you're going to say something.
But real quick, the reason that works in the DC movies is because you have a good guy.
Yeah.
Mm. You can't just have varying degrees of piece of shit with the worst one being the villain. Yeah. If you have no counterpoint.
Well, I think Kala is supposed to be the counterpoint, which brings us back off to, we have like a sort of scene with kind of Kala and Jula, who gets sent off to marry Aliyah, the horse botherer. She threatens him with the vengeance of the gods of Numidia, which presumably means less than nothing to him. Anyway, and then we have Tenax and Kala, and this is again supposed to be quite sexy, I think, when he's all like, "You betrayed me, so I have to kill you," and she's like, "Yeah, I betrayed you, but I also never lied to you." And it's like, that's, come on, you know what, Kala, that is sophistry. That's what you're engaged in.
Let's turn this into a role play.
You betrayed me.
They very nearly did.
You've been.
I would have liked it more
if they
had.
You've been a bad girl, Kala, etc. And then she
said, "You've been a very bad MILF."
And then she suggests, "Very bad MILF, Volume 4."
That DVD is on sale in good sex shops near you.
And she suggests that she stays on as his like girl boss. And says like, and he's like, "Yep, no, but I can't trust you because you super betrayed me. Like you totally betrayed me. You're a telltale tit, is what you are, Kala." And she says, "Look, I will never betray you again. I might betray you on behalf of my children," which I feel like is a big if. And because she loves betraying people on behalf of her children. So
that's like her favorite,
it's like
betrayal,
favorite
reason.
Betrayal reason. And so like, so like, you can't say apart from that, like, because that's like a massive, massive hole in the trust matrix. And so but then he sort of like agrees, because for some reason, Tenax, despite the fact he is the shadowy king of the Roman underworld, who has risen there, presumably through fair means or foul, but for some reason is also the most trusting person on this entire program. So he goes,
He's a street fighter with a heart of gold.
And then there's some more kind of slightly inappropriate erotic framing from these two. They have no chemistry.
That's the power of the MILF.
They have no chemistry whatsoever. He's got like an anti-MILF force field or something. She is smoking hot. I don't know why he's not into it, but he doesn't seem to be. And so she's like, "Okay, so I'm your girl boss," and he's like, "Yeah, okay, I can't stay mad at you because of your cheekbones." And then we have, God, this made me angry. It's made me even angrier than the fact that Tenax says the words of the die has been cast earlier on in the episode, to which I've just written "fuck off" in massive letters. So we have this kind of like, boom, kind of image of the Colosseum, and the kind of the camera is pulling out, and then we go back to voiceover because they lost the button that lets you do voiceovers since the first episode, and they've now found it again, so they can have Tenax doing. But because like the guy,
it was underneath the chariot race.
Yeah, like, the guy who knows how to do voiceover was off sick, and now he's back. So we've got another voiceover, despite the fact we haven't had voiceover since the first episode. And it's such a kind of, "And that's how the craziest summer of our lives started," kind of tone to it. It's Tenax saying, "At some point, I will travel to Syracuse to find out if I'm really a patrician." Why? Who cares?
Who fucking cares?
We've finally broken that.
Literally, what purpose? And then he says he has to keep an eye on Domitian because he's like a petulant child, which is something that Titus said earlier in the episode. And either this is like symmetrical and consistent characterization, or they literally forgot that they've already used this term.
It's the latter.
That's the last word on this show. It's just saying who fucking cares while having an aneurysm.
And then we have Domitian putting his crown on. And he does a kind of like, he sort of like kind of goes for it, like kind of like, what's his name? Like Bilbo Baggins, like going for the ring. He's like, "Yeah, why shouldn't I?"
He's feeling himself.
Then he kind of puts it on his head. But it's like the thing that it made me think of more than anything else is the scene right at the end of The Mask, when the bad guy played by Eric Roberts gets his hands on the mask and like kind of holds it up to the sky. And then it's like kind of, and it kind of goes, meh, 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 and it kind of fuses on his face, and like the lightning goes, and he's like, I'm the baddest, ugliest guy in the world. Like that. And that's what it's like when Domitian is putting his crown on. And that's the end. That's it.
And that is the end. That is it.
That is it.
Right. We're sorry about this show. We're sorry that we had to talk about it for 10 episodes. Sorry. What more can we say? Next week, we're doing fucking Megalopolis. At the request of you, the hogs. Yeah. So tune in for that.
So if there are any complaints about the coverage of Megalopolis, then I refer you back to the fact that this was an extremely popular request.
We can do those about to die again. We'll turn this around. If you don't like the coverage of Megalopolis.
We will do it. We will do it again.
Bear that in mind.
In fact, you know what? We'll do it and we will come up with songs to go with it.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Thank you for being a Patreon subscriber.
And again, we're so sorry. We're so sorry about all of this.
Yeah.
Really.
We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.